Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What's going on, everybody? How's it going? Hope you're having a wonderful holiday time. Tonight, it is just me, BJ, and Brian. Say hi, Brian.
Oh, I'm supposed to say hi? Is this a podcast? I thought we were just hanging out.
Right.
Hey, everyone. How's it going? Yeah, I'm yay. Podcasting, somehow, even though we do these fairly regularly, it's always kind of a new adventure. Kind of like Doctor Who.
Oh, I see what you did there. That was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yes, whenever you listen to this, we're doing a Doctor Who The Star Beast, which is the first of the 60th anniversary specials that are on Disney Plus. Weird, but I accept it. I already have that streaming service, so that's a plus.
You of all people should be very accepting of the fact that Disney has taken over yet another beloved thing. I mean, your time with that evil, delightful empire has, I mean, maybe not. Maybe you have like developed complete and utter hatred. I don't know. Why is this a problem? I think it's a good thing because like Marvel, like Pixar, like Studio Ghibli for a little while in the similar kind of way, they had like a partnership. Like the Muppets, Disney does a good job of protecting IP. Oh, Star Wars, of course. How could we forget? Like, they actually are a good, like, benevolent overlord. so I mean, in those properties across the board, I think, I'm sure there's some who would say otherwise, but like, they've done a good job of letting them be their own thing. Yeah, they want a little brand synergy. Yeah, they want you to crank out things that they can make toys out of. And yeah, they also take their IPs and use them in their parks and other media. But like, of course they will. Like, that's a mutually beneficial thing. That's not just going to go to help Disney. So yeah, I'm very excited about the partnership with Disney.
It's a symbiote.
There you go.
So it's one of those things where I appreciate the fact that, honestly, so here's the thing. Disney owns so many things, and it's so creepy to me because I used to watch a series called Epic Rap Battles of History.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
The
Does Disney
studio,
own that?
Yes,
what?
The studio that they filmed all of the Epic Rap Battles of History stuff is owned by a subsidiary of Disney, and I know this because they did a Jim Henson versus Stan Lee season finale where Walt Disney comes in as like a third MC, and at one point one of his lines is like, he just hop on my tugboat, boys.
Oh,
you'll be safe,
gosh,
under my employ. Now look at it, my empire of joy. So it's one of those things where it's just like, it's all encompassing. But in all honesty, if as long as they allow the IPs to kind of do what they want, you're good. It's just when they step in and start meddling is when you're, but they haven't, because they learned their lesson with Pixar.
Oh, I think Pixar is absolutely probably one of the worst examples. See, I also forget English. It's a worse example because, yeah, I think with Pixar, they did kind of get in. And at first it was great because they brought Lasseter mm-hmm. over and he righted the ship with Disney Animation, which had been kind of going downhill and going through a lot of changes. But then, you know, I don't know what happened with Lasseter. I know he had some issues. I don't know what quite happened, if he's still around or just in a very non-public role. But like, yeah, they started kind of cranking out the sequels to the Pixar stuff. It was just diluting it and diluting it and what happens. But before we get – so we're way down in the weeds on the behind-the-scenes stuff. Who are we? First of all, we're Flame On, which we forget. And anyway, you're listening in a podcast listener, you probably know this is Flame On, of course. But just to make it, you know, very legit, we don't get yelled at by our own benevolent overlord, Pat, the producer extraordinaire, and honestly one of the biggest Doctor Who fans that should be on this show, but he
wants to catch up. And I keep telling people, I know so many people that are so excited about this, and I'm like, you don't have to catch up. I actually, this is one of the things I've enjoyed about Doctor Who, like having been such a long time fan, is that you really can jump on when there's a new showrunner. So like it's actually more about sticking with the showrunner if you want something interconnected. But once a new showrunner takes over, and honestly, I think now that Russell T. Davis has come back full circle, there could be one or two references to like 2005 to like end of Tenet era, right before Stephen Moffat took over.
There've been a lot of references. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Like a new showrunner for sure sort of resets the board, but just a new doctor, a new companion, a new season. Doctor Who is one of the most, and has always been, I think, one of the most mindful shows about new beginnings. Like I said, it's like a whole new adventure. So yeah, every time from that first regeneration from the first doctor, the second doctor, like they love, oh, heck, even before that, with the different companions that the first doctor traveled with, like they always provide these entry points that you can jump in. And so, yeah, like I love the fact that this is a new entry point because Davis has come back and he does have, you know, a new face. Doctor has a new face because that's the whole point of regeneration. But again, what's weird is this is not a new face. It's an old face that's come back. And that is not the first time that's happened, but it's the first major time that it's happened. And it's very confusing to the doctor because he's like, wait, what? But to that point, though, you do have a sort of a mix now of this new doctor with an old face. So you're getting some of the catchphrases. You're getting some of the little callbacks to the Russell era, specifically, though, with his companion, Donna, who is now one of the first companions to come back in a like long term, meaningful way. I say long term, but we all know
it's, she's come. So it's funny. So we have to start at the end, and I will say Jodie Whittaker's final line is probably my all time favorite final line. Like, it almost drove me to tears, which is the, all right, Doctor, whoever I'm about to be, tag, you're it. And so now we've got the 14th Doctor, which is officially David Tennant. David Tennant is also is considered the 14th Doctor.
Yeah. He was the 10th, and now he's the 14th.
Now he's the 14th. So I'm sure they're gonna. I'm 90% sure they're gonna address why his face came back. However, there's a little something. The 50th anniversary. They brought back Tom Baker.
Yes.
As possibly the Doctor from the future, but known as the Curator. And before he goes off screen, he makes the comment. He's like, you'll probably see some familiar faces, but just the favorites.
That was a Moffat thing that he threw in there. And it was definitely one of those, like the first time that the Doctor sort of joked about knowing a Time Lord that could become change genders. Like that was a throwaway kind of joke in an episode. And then it became a real thing. Same thing with the Curator line. It was kind of meant to be a sort of a cameo that was a little more than a cameo. And then set sort of the precedent now that they can do that. So, I mean, all that to say, what's it? The way has been prepared for, or whatever. There's a line in one of the Doctor Who regenerations. The moment has been prepared for. Like, this is all sort of seeded throughout. But as we were kind of talking about, you don't necessarily have to know any of this to enjoy this episode. This story, as much as it does reunite a former Doctor and a former companion, so to speak, it's a new story. It's a brand new story about a brand new alien invasion-ish thing that happens in Doctor Who, right? you know, yes, there are characters that if you did watch some of the old Tenet stuff, you'd have more backstory, but it's like, you know, anything else, go watch it now. Go watch it after. Go learn about it after. You don't have to watch it in the same order everybody else did. And honestly, more people will probably have that. Actually, I shouldn't say more, but a lot of people will have that experience where they just popped it on and didn't know any of the old stuff. And then now they're they're interested, and then they'll go back and watch it.
And my thing is I love the fact that they included that little snippet at the very beginning. They gave like a little.
You like that though?
It was awkward. You know what? It was probably awkward for us because we watched it. Well, that's my thing.
Okay, so let's talk about this. So we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive on this episode. We're not going to try to go all the way through everything, but you know how we do. We might. I will say there will be spoilers because we're already talking about some stuff. Oh, yeah. So, hey, by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. Go watch it like our friend and colleague Pat and Eric have not done. But maybe by the time we actually put this out, they'll have done it. I don't know. But we'll be spoiling it. So that first thing, before any other... Ooh, where did you get the shade button? You have a shade button?
I logged in with Pat's login, so I have the shade button.
Oh, so jealous. See, I mean, I only started this show. I don't get any of the cool toys that everybody else gets. No, I honestly love that you did that. That was as much as it has sort of not been a big part of Drag Race lately, I feel like it should come back and maybe we'll just, you know, make that happen. But no. So the first thing you see before you get to any titles, you get to anything, you have fourth wall breaking addresses to the camera by the doctor and Donna independently. And the doctor's is just kind of awkward. He's in space, like just standing there. So it's kind of just a weird composite job. So that's already weird. And he's basically like giving you the catch up. He's catching you up on what you need to know. And that basically he's come back as an old face, and suddenly now he's going to run into Donna. I mean, he's kind of setting this all up. But then Donna's like sitting in her computer, vlogging. I don't know what she's doing, hanging out there talking to the camera from her computer, but not talking to her computer's camera. Definitely something, you know, you can see the computer. Like, I almost feel like that was a. And I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was an original, like Davis thought, you know, hey, we need this to explain this, whatever. But it almost felt like a Disney note, like, hey, you know, a lot of people aren't going to have watched Doctor Who because this is a brand new thing for them.
I think so. I feel, you know what, that actually 100% kind of feels like it. Like not, it feels like a note that Davis was like, you know what, sure, I'll do that, like, but whatever.
You're right. For us, for anyone who's watched the show for any length of time, it's not necessary. We know this situation.
You know what would have made it less awkward? I wish there was a skip button. I would have hit a skip button.
Right.
If there's a skip button for it, I would have absolutely slammed that bitch and gotten right into the episode.
Well, it's like in a comic book, and I don't know if they still do this, but I think they do. And it's certainly anyway, they do like one page catch up at the beginning. So if you really don't know what's going on, but you still want to read the comic, it'll get you caught up. It'll tell you what's going on. It'll give you all you need to know. Nowadays with these streaming shows, they'll do their like quick recap. And I would have preferred, honestly, I would have preferred that with judiciously selected clips. Yeah. The quality's not going to be the same. So I understand maybe that's a little, you know. All that to say, I thought, because somebody had told me that there was like a little bit of a fourth wall thing happening there. And I was like, okay, what? Like the doctor doesn't do that often. Like that's not a thing unless it is a thing. Like that's a special moment. This is not what you get. You don't get Deadpool doing whatever, but that's not what this was exactly. This is just like that pre-show out of time. Yeah. A recap of whatever. I think if the doctor hadn't been just standing in space, weirdly, if he had been hanging out in the TARDIS, I think stylistically they could have done something to make it either a little funnier or
that's why it feels like a Disney thing, because it feels like just a random edit that was on the cutting room floor, that somebody either at Disney or BBC was like, no, you should put this in. And I guarantee you there's probably some cast members that were cringing at like, why is that there?
Yeah. I've heard other people who didn't mind it as much, and I guess that's fine. Whatever. I don't care. By the way, just to level set, I have nothing. Well, I have mostly positive things about this episode. So you're getting one of the maybe two or three things that I did not like. And we're not doing it in the order that we normally do, which is fine because we're just going to go through the whole thing. But
I say go ahead. Since you've already started, let's go ahead and go with like what are your little nitpicky things about this episode?
Oh, you just want to go straight to the negative?
Oh, absolutely. Because we will end on a sweet note.
Well, well, no. So I don't like that opening thing, and it sounds like you don't either. What's another thing you didn't like?
So for me, honestly, this is the good complaint. So it's tricked you. I almost wish this had been a two-parter. Yes, because honestly, the family dynamic, I wanted more of that. I wanted more of the family dynamic. We kind of just got thrown into it. And I actually would have loved it if that weird intro if the weird intro hadn't been there, they could have easily fit a couple minutes of something else, either with the family or with the doctor. I'd say it's the pacing. The pacing was just a little off by the middle of the episode. I was just thoroughly invested. It's that little intro thing affected the pacing for me, and the pacing in a it wasn't terrible, but it was weird. Like everything felt really weird and fast for the first, I want to say, 10 minutes. I was like, you're already here. This is really quick. So, that's why I wish it had been more of a two-parter.
They went from the doctor lands, the doctor is out. Oh, hey, the doctor just met Donna. Oh, crap. And it's funny. Like, that whole opening is really funny and fun. Yeah. But then you're thrown into, oh, here's Rose. And you're like, wait, Rose? And then, of course, they make that, like, you know, face. Like, well, Rose? You know, because Rose is an old companion. And you meet Yasmin Finney's character, which was amazing, and we'll talk a lot about, I'm sure, her role in this. But I think they're just – you're right. It was so fast. It jumped in.
And we met Sean, and Sean was so fucking cute.
Did Sean show up in the old series too? Was he at the very end? Okay, that's what somebody said, and I just don't remember.
It was the same actor. He was the doctor went to her wedding. And she walked out with him. And there was another scene where when the doctor was with Wilf at the cafe, he was outside with Donna getting into the car.
Okay. Okay.
So we actually got to meet him.
Yeah. I mean, great, great addition to the family and hilariously unflappable. And probably the chillest husband, father you'd ever, ever expect to find. Honestly, not that I am married or have children, but I have such anxiety about dumb like things in my life that like, I don't think I just could not imagine being in his shoes and being so like chill about everything. it was remarkable. So yeah, I think you're right. Pacing is a problem. I think you've thrown into it a little bit fast. I think if this had been a full season, which spoilers, by the way, there's only three episodes with this combination. This is a 60th anniversary special. The Doctor Who show will, in more recent years, will do this. They'll have like a sort of interstitial set of episodes that don't belong to a season. They're just sort of a series of specials. And that's what this is. So the fourth Doctor, the 10th Doctor, previous Tenant, so to speak, he had a set of specials with like Waters of Mars, the next Doctor was a Christmas special. There was like a couple though. It was like
It was Waters of Mars. I think it was the Waters of Mars. It was the next Doctor, the Waters of Mars, and then there was
the two-parter end of time thing.
Two-parter end of time.
Yeah. So then that kind of wraps up a Doctor. So that's what they're doing. It's three specials. This is the first one about the Star Beast, which. I'm sure BJ did his research, but this is actually from a comic strip, like a sequential art series in a Doctor Who magazine that they adapted. And it's very reading it. I have actually not read the original. I've seen pictures of art by the amazing what's his name? Gibbons. Oh my gosh, cannot think of his first name. Who did Watchmen? Dave Gibbons. So some really great art that, you know, he defined the what Meep looked like. He defined what the Wraith Wrath. Wrath or whatever. Like, he defined what they all look like. So, I mean, great artwork that was adapted. And the writers of the story were Pat Mills and originally credited with John Wagner, but I guess John Wagner was like a writing partner at the time and kind of put his name on a lot of stuff that Pat Mills did. When they gave the credits in the episode, and I guess they paid them too, they paid Pat Mills and Dave Gibbons for.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So not only did they get the credit, the first title, whatever, but then they got some money. And also, they did a whole.
You know who voiced the Meep?
Marilyn Margulies, did I say her name?
Yes.
Marion
Margulies. I was like, why does this voice sound familiar?
She's amazing. Like, she's very versatile as an actress. I think I heard that a long time ago though, and I had forgotten. So what I do like about this new incarnation of Doctor Who under Russell Davis and his team at Bad Wolf Productions, there's a lot of great behind the scene content that is like out immediately on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And if you go look for this right now on the Doctor Who channel, whatever, they have just some great behind the scenes stuff about this. And we haven't talked about it, or maybe we did on the show separately, but the Children in Need special. I don't think we did.
No, we didn't.
We should talk about that briefly at the end of this. There's a little interstitial moment the 14th Doctor has.
What was one more? What was another?
Oh, yes. The negatives.
I think you and I talked about it.
Thank you for reining me back in. Because this is the problem. This has happened before when we talk about Doctor Who. I don't love the entire trans storyline. And let me explain. I love the fact that they have a trans storyline. That's not the point. I don't like how it was done entirely. I think the dead naming, I'm okay with, because it's the bad guys are doing it, so to speak. The kids that are harassing them. And I guess Davis was explaining that the name, her dead name, rather, was... a tie to the Doctor somehow. Like, there's there's something there that's sort of tied in. But overall, Davis did a little piece. I think it was during the Doctor Who podcast. There's a Doctor Who official podcast now, and they have a YouTube video up. And he's like, listen, I think that this is the right call here as far as dead naming in the episode by the bad guys to show this is not good behavior. But he's actually like asking the community to weigh in. So that one, okay, fine. I get it. Rose is a trans woman. And this is the crux of the problem, because then Rose becomes part of the solution of the metacrisis. The metacrisis is a very oddly named condition that Donna had, where she was imbued with Time Lord magic, Time Lord DNA, Time Lord something, intelligence.
Well, his mind, essentially. His all mind. Of the Doctor's memories and his mind, essentially.
So this was why at the end of that whole end of time, like Donna had to forget who the Doctor was. And so this has been the whole crux of, oh my God, if they see each other again and she remembers him, she's going to have a mental break. She's going to die. She'll burn her up.
Her brain will essentially burn out.
Yeah. So that's the problem that they had to solve. And the way they solved it is by saying, well, but she, Donna, had a daughter. Daughter is Rose. The daughter is trans and therefore non-binary. And then the link back to, I guess, when Donna was sort of cascading from the memories, was repeating binary, like binary, binary, just saying binary over and over again. This is in the original episode. And so then, the solution when they get to this is to then intercut with Rose, who is now inherited the meta crisis and is also now part of this whole thing, intercutting her saying non-binary. Now, here's the thing. As far as a solution, it's about as messy and jammy as Doctor Who ever gets. Like, that's just par for the course. Don't care. It's fine.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The problem is she's trans, she's not non-binary.
Well, did they did they ever explicitly, and so right here they never explicitly said if Rose was binary, like was non-binary.
They don't say it, and I think it would have made more sense if they said Rose is non-binary. Her pronouns are they, she, they. But I think they they do a pronoun moment, which I actually think the pronoun moment's my favorite because Meep and the doctor both are like realize that they both use the definite article as their pronoun, and that's hilarious. But no, they kind of gloss through that with her, and they call her, not they. They didn't. They decided they weren't going to say they. And you can be non-binary and use she, her. I mean, that's less the issue. But I think where there's a problem here is you're conflating what is transgender and what is non-binary. And that's not, they're not the same, right? Yeah. They're very different. I have trans people in my life. I have non-binary friends in my life. They're not the same. Non-binary is a combination or sort of an intermingling or something altogether different from the binary gender. Whereas someone who is trans, and again, this is a broad generalization. I'm sure there's lots of permutations right there. But a lot of my trans friends, they're like, no, I am this gender. I am a single gender. I just was born with the wrong sex. So it's messy. It's complicated. I don't expect Doctor Who to tackle this head on and get it right. But it is one of those things that I kind of wish they had workshopped a bit more with trans and non-binary communities and really gotten to understand and get it right. You know?
And 100 and see, and that's where the extra time they could have saved, because I did a second watch through today.
Okay.
And sitting the, and honestly, I'm going to give Russell, this is one of the rare upward times I will give any producer, anybody in Hollywood, BBC or whatever, like the absolute benefit of the doubt, because if I go back and watch it with the idea that part, because the Rose seems very upset throughout the whole episode, like throughout pretty much until, I'm just going to start referring to Rose as they, until they formally take on the meta crisis and the idea that if Rose was in the middle of also trying to figure out if they were non-binary on top of being trans and what that meant and all the complicated feelings And so thinking that Rose is going through that explains a lot, especially the grandmother, when the grandmother actually kind of felt off when the grandmother went like, I told her she was gorgeous. That isn't weird, is it? The grandmother was like, something's wrong. Like Donna's Donna's mother of all people. But that
Donna's- but like, it's both, right? I see what you're saying. I think you're right. I think that is a charitable interpretation. I will say that.
Yes.
But having people in our lives, it makes more sense, right? But like also, I feel like, okay, so Russell Davis is in his, what, late 50s, early 60s. Cis white man, queer, great writer, do respect him. So none of this is a read on him at all. But his perspective is like mine, like in certain ways. We're both cis. We're both white. We have privilege, all these things. I do think he had trans and non-binary people in his life. I don't think he didn't talk about it at all. I think he did.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it might have been more straightforward, and you could have done it in a way that just didn't conflate the two and kept them separate. Because they're both like they're both intrinsically all kind of connected in gender and all this stuff. But like it would just make it a little more straightforward and you wouldn't unnecessarily conflate. But I do think it was, it's not Sylvia, Jackie, is that her name? No, Jackie's the other parent, Rose's parent, different Rose. Yes. Sylvia, right? Is that her name?
Yes, that's Sylvia. Okay. Jacqueline King is the actress.
Jacqueline King, that's the actress. That's okay. Because I was like, Jackie, why is it? That sounds right. Sylvia was doing that thing in a very sort of tropey way, and it's not a trope. My mom does this too.
Kind of like a panicked, like,
yeah, like doesn't know how to handle it because it's so outside of their experience or her experience, I should say, that she's like, but she's trying to figure it out, and that's the right thing. I mean, her attitude and her question was all very, very good. And mm-hmm. I like that. I appreciate that moment. But I read it more as just she was like, I'm just, it's awkward. I just don't understand it fully yet. I'm trying to figure it out. But I think both can be right. And I think I'm not saying that it's the worst thing ever that this happened.
Just a little messy. It's honestly
a little
just,
jammy. Like literally little, the term that they use, the unit chick, what's her name? The scientific advisor, she's not a chick, but you know.
Oh, advisor number 56.
Yeah, I should know.
Love her outfit because her outfit looks like Jodie Whittaker's.
Oh my God, right. I love her in general. I think she's a great actress. Mm-hmm. She's actually been in some of the Big Finish stuff as well. So that's the audio
Ruth
series that.
Matt Madeli.
Thank you.
Madeley.
And we'll talk a little bit about the wheelchair thing too, because that's another beat I want to get to. But, in a good way, but like I just Davis is really trying hard and I appreciate him for doing that. And I appreciate that he put the transgender journey and experience in and or non-binary journey experience, if that's what they meant. I appreciate they put that right in front of all these people's, right in their homes, right in the front of their face. And they're like, look, you need to learn to deal with this and understand it. And that, even if it's a little jammy, which is what the unit advisor says about the doctor, it kind of works out. It's, I just want to point it out. I just want to say, and this isn't, by the way, this isn't my cisgendered perspective. This is coming from a transgendered individual who watched the show and was like, what just happened? I'm confused about that. So, take that what you will. Other than that, I think negatives wise, there weren't a lot more. I think overall, it does a great job of adapting what I understand from the original story. It solidly brings back Dr. and Donna. It introduces a new TARDIS interior, which is beautiful and crazy, and I love it.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to start into the things we love. No. Can I tell you with the thing with the TARDIS interior, the one thing that I absolutely love about it is when they say bigger on the inside, that sucker is the fact he had the David Tennant had to have been out of breath in that scene because he ran like a full run through that entire space. That the TARDIS is fucking huge and I love it.
And evidently that scene is not one they had originally scripted. It was very much a David Tennant as a Doctor Who fanboy from when he was a child having a moment where he's like, oh my God. And like loving and just improvising and running all over that place. So you'll see on pictures online. Of course, this is not, this is audio medium. You're not watching us. I hope it kind of is like very much a throwback to the old school black and white sort of, but white, very white forward. But I love the LED rondelles that like change color and that's cool. The round things. I think I need a few more round things. That was one of the earlier doctor's comments about the interior. But yeah, the fact they changed color, you can use that for different lighting effects, different moods of the TARDIS, so to speak. I love a good mood ring, mood rock, mood LED thing that changes with whatever. So I love that. I love the console, the center console. I do not love the column part. I think whatever's inside looks a little weird and chintzy. I do like the cylinders, I think, is more of the classic or what I like about. Anyway, doesn't matter. Nitpicky. I love the bottom, the base. You know how the 10th Doctor's first TARDIS had like that base that you could go down and like check things out and work
kinda
on stuff.
Kind of like the engine area, yeah. Sort of like you could root around in it.
I like that. And they kind of kept the spirit of that and by having that base underneath. I just love the multi-levelness of it. And it's huge. So yeah, I full fan. I think at first I was kind of like, wait a minute. So this is where all the Disney money went, but also like, it's so white and like, it just, it's so futuristic. I think somebody actually on that Doctor Who podcast, someone was like, it just exudes the future. And for the Doctor, you want that because it sets him apart from whatever else. But if you look at the console has chrome, not chrome, sorry, like copper bits. It has the brass. Contrast of, yeah, the brass. It has like contrast of some old, very less futuristic technology. And that dichotomy is always what makes an interesting TARDIS. The coffee thing, I don't know. I think that's a little weird, but evidently one of the old TARDISes had a biscuit maker.
Yeah, it was better. No, that was Jodie's. So, it's a little bit better than the random biscuit maker.
I mean, so like it's a whatever. And of course, for this, it was a plot device because it lets Donna do her ridiculous whatever and then blow up the TARDIS. So I do love that. I think what's another. So I don't even remember who picked what. Did you pick the interior of the TARDIS? Did I pick it? I don't know. I can't remember anything.
I think you were starting to talk about it. So we both picked that
one. All right. So what's another thing you loved?
So for me, honestly, the practical effects, I think I like Doctor Who lately, at least within the past couple of seasons, has had some really good practical effects. But the practical effects on the Meep and the Wrath, I mean, I don't know how you make a grasshopper soldier look cool, but they made a grasshopper soldier look cool. And the Meep, when the Meep turns, when their face just like morphs into that angry look, I was like, well, that's horrifying and going to give me nightmares for the rest of my life. But
did you know about the turn ahead of time?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure because
I thought maybe, and that was my thing, is like they always like to throw curveballs sometimes. So I thought maybe I'm like, oh, this might be the only good one. And then I was like, nope, it was not.
So if you knew the original comic or you heard, then yeah, you're like, oh, wait, the Meep's this cute whatever. But oh, spoiler alert, he's actually an evil, alien conqueror taking over the universe, whatever. So that turn, and especially the way they did it, is pretty great. And like someone was like, oh, my God, if you own a cat or if you have a cat in your life, you've definitely seen that transformation before. And it fills you with horror.
Absolutely. Yeah. So practical effects were amazing.
So I think so. They, again, behind the scenes stuff, the battle they had in the neighborhood with the Wraths and the unit soldiers and blah, blah, blah. Like that one was pretty great. I like the when they're going through the house, the row houses, and they're going from one attic to another.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty great. Also, very practical.
How did you feel about the sonic screwdriver?
Oh, I love it. So here's the thing.
That
I collect the sonic screwdrivers. They're a big part of my Doctor Who enjoyment, and I do not have the new one. I actually need to order that. But I think adding additional powers, which, oh my God, the first of all, anyone who has ever like followed Doctor Who, you know that the sonic screwdriver is anything you need it to be. Doesn't matter if it makes any sense. And so, and depending on the writer, there are writers who definitely don't like falling back on it as basically a magic wand.
I appreciated the fact that in the previous Doctor, she called it more of a, she's like, it's more of a multi-tool, a sonic multi-tool. And I appreciated that because it's kind of
a Swiss Army knife, but not even a knife, because the Swiss Army knife has like everything in it. So yeah, the new powers basically are, it draws like displays like amazingly synchronized useful displays. You just draw a box with it and suddenly you can use it as a little monitor, and then it produces these barriers like force field blocks that you can like put in place as a shield, which honestly the Doctor not having something like that historically, I mean the Doctor isn't typically a warrior. He's solving problems. He's saving people. And so part of that saving people is, well, you need a shield. You need a way to protect people. Yeah. So like, I think it's nice. Is it something that is going to be maybe, well, could it be overutilized? Absolutely. Hopefully it's sort of just a in the moment situation. And he won't do that very often.
And it didn't last long. Like it was 100% not like indestructible or anything,
temporary.
Just enough to get away, which is a very defensive sort of strategy, which I appreciated that.
No, I do too. I think overall the resolution was like I said, there were issues, but minor. I did really enjoy the scene that's very reminiscent of the end of time where Donna and the Doctor are separated excuse me, by a like a glass barrier or whatever, barrier.
That scared was tough. The shit out of me, because that's almost exactly what happened with Wilf.
Right.
And him getting stuck in the box. And I was like, absolutely the fuck not. But let me tell you, the number one thing I loved was when Donna was completely, like, I love the whole moments where she had, where she was just like, I sometimes think I lost something. Like, that kind of broke my heart.
Oh, every time.
But then when she comes back, the first thing out of her mouth, I gave away my money.
Yes. So we didn't even mention the money thing. So evidently, do we mention it? Like, she got a lot. The doctor gave her a lottery ticket as he was leaving. Is like, oh, okay, I need to make sure you're going to be okay here. And it was like some millions and millions of dollars, whatever. And yeah, she gives it all away because in this weird, like, she can't remember anything, but she knows it's there somewhere. And she has these instincts that are very doctor-like. In her head, it was like she had to give it all away. So that was pretty funny and horrifying. And in this economy, you know, pretty bad.
But the best part is the doctor was even asking the same thing. He was even going, why did she give away her money? Like, and then the idea that even the doctor was like, don't give away your money.
Well, he got it for her. So, you know, I mean, yeah. And that was pretty good.
It was hilarious. I also love that Sean's reaction to his wife and his daughter, like, essentially having weird powers and then just giving them up is him going, how lucky am I? And I just protect that man at all costs. I swear to God.
He's such a gem. So the only other thing I want to talk specifically about that's sort of not good or bad, but it's interesting, is the – one more good. Sorry. The score. So I love Murray Gold's score. I think in this episode he did so many little motif callbacks in the first, like, half hour, no, not even, like, 15 minutes to the previous Doctor's themes, and not just Tennant's theme, but, like, Eccleston's theme and Eleven/Capaldi's theme. And Murray Gold is amazing. I'm so glad he's back. I forgot the guy's name who did the previous era with Chibnall and Whitaker.
Oh, yeah.
Signoli. I can see his name spelled out ish, but I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
I did really like the theme for the 13th Doctor. I really loved
it. I liked it more. It grew on me over time, but I don't think he had the same breadth of ability that Gold does. And it's partly a tonal thing. Murray Gold loves a bombast. Whereas that other composer, he is a little more understated, but interesting. It's very, yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to, that had to be in the list. So unrelated to good or bad, if you saw the children, did you see the Children in Need special?
I did.
Okay. So Children in Need is a charity thing. It's a, it's an annual, like, I don't know, it's been going on for like 40 years. Tradition where they'll have these little bits, and Doctor Who has always been a part in different ways. One of my favorites, I always confuse Children in Need with Red Letter or Red Nose Day. So they're both big charity events. I don't know which one was which, but they have done Doctor Who skits and little vignettes throughout, and they've introduced a new Doctor on one of them, whatever. One of my favorites though is actually Stephen Moffat written piece that's very funny, but it's like a Doctor Who. If the Doctor was Rowan Atkinson, actually played by Rowan Atkinson at first, and then regenerates and then actually turns into a woman. So they presaged years and years and years before this, before even the throwaway line, they did the Doctor as a woman thing, played by Joanne Lumley from Ab Fab, amazingly. Doesn't matter, but this Children of Need was a interstitial sort of in between from when he regenerates as the 14th Doctor to when he's on his way to wherever. And he crashes into a Dalek, the first Dalek,
yep,
on Skarrow in front of Castilian, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Cassavellian. Anyway, he's like
Cassavellian or something like that.
He's a henchman. He's a henchman guy. But so that's funny. And they make a joke about they use the plunger as a thing. It's cute. You got to watch it. It's up on YouTube. But the interesting thing that Davis has been very vocal about is he's like, I am not going to put a bad guy in a wheelchair. And the leader of the Daleks, Davros, historically from the beginning, has always been in not a wheelchair, but in like a half Dalek you know, suit. So that perhaps like, is, yeah.
Yeah.
So long story short, he's like, it is ableist to do that. And it is a trope that I do not want to acknowledge. I don't want to, he's acknowledging it, but he's saying, I don't want to do that. So Davros, the way we are envisioning him going forward, is not in that suit, not in that wheelchair situation. So he is ambulatory.
Was that the actor that played him?
It is. Julian Bleach, I think is his name.
Yeah.
It's the same guy.
It's weird not seeing him all like shriveled and him actually being like healthy before he gets like converted, starts his conversion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, it is weird. And so that's what some people are like, oh, well, that's just before he ends up in the chair. And it's like, no. Davis is basically saying, like, he said this on an interview. He's like, I want this to be the way forward. I do not want to go back to it. And then on the other side of it, he put the scientific advisor character in a wheelchair as a good guy and then as a sick, tricked out wheelchair, like, like James Bond era, you know, and units always had a little bit of a MI6 James Bondish sort of spy tech element, right? But no, I think I see people who are like, oh my god, he's going too far, but I also really appreciate what he's doing here, and he's being mindful of these tropes that a lot of people just kind of accept, but really have been a problem and contributed in some way to defining people who have different abilities in terms of mobility or other disabilities. Like, so I'm really glad that he did this. And I'm not like so heartbroken that we're not going to see Davros in his freaking chair. I mean, who cares?
No, because you know, the best part about this is the very last time we saw Davros, the doctor took him out of his chair and stole it. And that is probably my favorite Kirpaldi moment
forgot
of all
about
time.
That. Yeah.
Where he steals it. And then when they open up the door, he wheels in and goes, admit it, you've had this exact nightmare.
That was pretty funny.
It was the most random thing I've ever seen in my life.
Pretty great.
Honestly, Davros wandering around, like he was, even though that was like a Children in Need special, that was actually kind of hilarious.
Yeah. It's still intense.
Was still very intense, and like, I don't know, Davros walking around sounds a little bit creepier to me now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think in some ways it does make him a little whatever. But like, again, all this is to say I appreciate Russell Davis, and if this is his, if this is now his mission to, and I hate saying it this way, and I apologize because this word is definitely charged, but if this is his wokeification of Doctor Who, I am both thrilled to hear the bullshit that we are going to now hear from people on the right about this and how they've just ruined Doctor Who, blah, blah, blah. And also now frustrated by the fact that we're going to hear this, it forces an issue in a good way and in a great way and makes it very progressive and very like, you know, straightforward, like here you go. But also, yeah, it's that backlash. That's going to be like, oh, whatever. And Doctor Who has always been on the progressive side of things. Don't ever fool yourself to think otherwise. It actually, and I wanted to tie this back, that Beep the Meep adventure comic had a companion named Sharon, who I did not know about, and I just recently learned was the first companion of color ever.
Yes.
Like before the current incarnation of Doctor Who, like for, because that contract came out in the 80s, like. Yeah, so that's pretty huge. And so, like, that's not necessarily just a progressive thing. But, I mean, I want it to be very clear. Doctor Who has long, long, long time, and you know, like Star Trek, envisioned a very progressive future where everyone is welcome and mm-hmm. and included and all the things. Not to say it hasn't fallen short of that. It has over the years.
This will bring me to my final thing that I have been thoroughly enjoyed and I'm going to keep enjoying as the reactions and the months go by, is how angry it's making a group of people, because I've literally watched 10 videos today of literally the videos are just how the BBC has forever ruined Doctor Who.
And really? They're out there now, huh?
Oh, they're all over the... And I'm loving every delicious morsel, because specifically, it's when Rose... First of all, psychologically, Russell T. Davis is either a mad genius or subconsciously he's enraged, because that clip where Rose like looks at the doctor and goes, "Hey, aren't you, why are you assuming that the Meep wants to be, the Meep's pronouns are he?" And that whole exchange lit a fire, and it is burning away all of the most toxic fans for Doctor Who. Let me tell you, good riddance, because like it is literally that scene, because people, the most toxic of people, have been holding on to like Rose Tyler as like the epitome of the feminine and the most like perfect woman to be your assistant. And now that you have a trans woman of color being who is now named Rose, who is now canonically a Rose in Doctor Who with their favorite doctor. It was a recipe for this meltdown and this dude. Like, I watched a guy cry.
Oh no! Seriously,
like, and I got a sick satisfaction from it. I'm telling everybody listening, I absolutely
you would drink their tears. Yeah, yeah.
I am going to listen to that to go to sleep tonight. I'm just telling you, like, it's just one of those things where sometimes the trash takes itself out.
And they just sound like such whiny, bitchy fanboys. And I mean, admittedly, I'm sure I sound like a whiny, bitchy fanboy in certain times. In fact, I think if you go back and listen to any of the episodes from the last 12 years, you're going to hear me sound like a whiny, bitchy fanboy. No question. But like, I have long since moved past, thank God, this idea that you have to protect these characters, and oh my God, how dare you change the latest nonsense is people like, oh my God, they're going to make the Silver Surfer a woman. Oh my God. And it's like, y'all, Jesus, just like let things go. Like, this is not, we're not talking about this, but the next episode, I want to talk like the full episode about Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, because have a story that is very, 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 very set in a certain era, but also very treasured among a lot of fanboys and girls. Fan people, let's just say. Fans. That's probably the easier one. So fans. But like, they made some changes in this adaptation for Netflix that I could see breaking some heads. Not in like the we're making this progressive or whatever, but in some ways, but like so that just like let it go. Let it just let the different incarnations exist. And you know what? It doesn't matter if it doesn't all 100% line up with your head canon or the real canon or whatever.
If just, you don't like it, chill. It's completely okay to stop watching it.
And then, you know, fine. The thing about Doctor Who is you wait a few years and it'll regenerate and maybe you'll like the next thing. Who knows?
God forbid, showrunner.
If we get a weirdly not progressive, we get a really conservative showrunner, which probably never happened with Doctor Who. But like, heaven forbid, if we're in like the dystopian Hunger Games future and the doctor is this conservative weirdo. I mean, God only knows. And then I won't like it and I'll bitch like a fanboy, a whiny fanboy. Oh, by the way, the composer, I could not remember the name of, Segun Akinola. And so I apologize that I did not remember his name, but yeah, he did all the stuff for Whitaker and it's good. It's real good. It would have been kind of nice if they had even quoted that, but and maybe they didn't, I missed it. But yeah, that score of Murray Gold, and the new opening credits, we didn't even talk about the credits. The credits are beautiful.
My favorite. I love the new, especially the visuals where it's like the TARDIS surfing.
That was like a trip. That was like, I was like, I've never seen that before. But I mean, you know, in a credits situation.
Gorgeous. Absolutely. So are you, so here's the thing. So now that we're only 20 minutes over time, that's fun. Like the doctor, we've stretched our time. So we've got two more specials coming up. We've got Into the Blue Yonder. And then Wild I don't know
Blue.
The title of the
Wild Blue Yonder?
Wild Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember what the title of the Giggle, which is Neil Patrick Harris as the toy maker. So I'm very, very, very excited to see how that shakes out.
I'm excited for both. I think Neil Patrick Harris is, you know, a gift and it's going to be so much fun. But I'm honestly more excited because they had a 60th, like, oh my God, happy birthday, Doctor Who. And Jinx Monsoon was in her outfit that she's playing this new character or this character. Yes. We don't know if she's new or not. And I'm actually more excited about that reveal. Like, I kind of want her to be the, I don't want, like, the giggle is going to be the toy maker, and it's probably the boss that the Meep is referring to. Who knows?
Well, so no,
but I want it almost to be Jinx as the boss.
The rumor is that actually there will be references to whatever and whoever the Doctor is going to be dealing with after the specials.
Okay.
And I think the new Doctor will be a Christmas special. So we won't have to wait long for the new Doctor to make their debut.
Well, they'll make their debut at the end of the 60th. So the third one, the giggle, is going to end with the regeneration, is what we're all basically expecting. I mean, it could be a big surprise, and it's not, or it's something else. I've heard some wild theories lately, but yeah, the Christmas special, the church on Ruby Road, is going to be the new Doctor, Shudigatwa's Doctor, and the new companion, Ruby Gold.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's very exciting. And, you know, obviously as much as these specials are great, and I'm very thrilled that Davis is back, I'm really very, very, very excited about that Doctor's premiere and the new companion and just the new direction that the show is going to go in forward. And not that these three specials aren't great in their own respects, but they're kind of the looking back that everybody felt like they needed to do before we go into the Wild Blue Yonder or whatever. Like, that's the excite that as a Doctor Who fan, that's where I'm really, really excited. So yay, Christmas. Soon, very soon, but God, it's coming up too soon, I think, almost. But and I'm glad Christmas specials are back. I'm nothing against the New Year's as a holiday, great. But honestly, when they changed that, I was like, what? Come on, what are you doing? Like, you can be an atheist and still celebrate Christmas. It's a pagan tradition. Like, just don't. I don't even know why they did it, but Christmas specials and Doctor Who go hand in hand, at least since 2005, or 2006 when the first one. Anyway, I'm very thrilled that that's back, and I hope that never goes away again.
So, well, if you are all enjoying this episode, and if you have enjoyed this episode and you enjoy hearing me and Brian prattle on 23 minutes past our micro episode,
it's extra value.
It's extra value. It's extra bang. Mm-hmm. So not for a buck, because right now our Patreon is paused. But hopefully in the new year we can get that squared away and you guys can start throwing us some cheddar, some cheese, some shmoney.
Just share the podcast with your friends. Honestly, the Patreon's all that's great. It would be leave us a review. Yeah. Like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. But just tell a friend. Honestly, it's even better. Just tell your friends. Say, hey, there's a queer podcast. A bunch of people are talking about shit. Like, just hey, what about this? Share this with somebody. So that's your Christmas gift. You could do a lot worse for friends. You know what
I'm
saying?
Absolutely.
And it costs you nothing.
And in the meantime, feel free to hit us up on any of our socials at flameonshow.com, flameonshow on Facebook. Hit us up. I'm going to start kind of I'm going to try and pump these boys up to actually post some stuff on the Instagram.
I've been thinking about it. It's never far from the, you know, but I do post already at Flame on Brian. So if you're close, or you just want to follow my wacky adventures, at Flame on Brian is the with a Y, Brian with a Y, is certainly a place I am currently posting. So, you know, but in the new year, I think we should have more excitement on the socials. Wherever those socials are, if it's Blue Sky, if it's Xmas, Twitter, X, whatever, I don't know, whatever the hell.
You have a bunch of Blue Sky codes. I think I should definitely use one of those to make us say an official Blue Sky, so we can get off of X Twitter, whatever that is. But anyway, thank you all for listening to us. Thank you for thank you for all the love you've given us over the year. Hopefully we should be back soon with our end of the year full cast, and possibly, I believe, one or two more micros before we finish out the new year, and then our customary what are you excited for in the new year microsode or micro or nuggie. Those are still a thing. So.
Oh, the nuggies.
So anyway, with that, I'm going to be nice to you guys, and I'm saying goodbye, everybody. Have a wonderful day, night, or noon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.